Do you ever take time to think back in your life and consider whether you might have done things differently? Do you have any regrets? Why are we doing this today? A nurse in Australia who looks after people who are in their last 12 weeks of life has been asking them about their regrets that they have or anything that they might have done differently. Let's have a look at their top five answers. These were people who had 12 weeks or less left to live. Number one, the most common regret of all was, I wish I'd lived life true to myself rather than doing what others expected of me. Number two, and this came from every man that this nurse nursed, I wish I'd not worked so hard and missed my children growing up. Number three, I wish I had the courage to say what I really thought. Number four, I wish I had spent more time with my friends. And five, I wish I hadn't been so afraid of change and had been happier. What about you? If you're thinking back, any regrets you've had in life? 08459 555 678. Max Clifford with us this morning. Morning to you, Max.
Good morning, Stephen. I hope I've got more than a few weeks, but I'm more than happy to talk to you about this.
I hope you do too, Max. It's always nice to talk to you. And Anne Whittaker with us this morning as well. Morning to you, Anne.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Well, Max, what are your regrets?
I thought about this, and I think possibly I should have been a DJ on the radio, because what a wonderful way to make a fortune so easily. But apart from that, the only thing is I wish I'd known my dad better. In terms of living life my own way, I've been lucky. I've always done that. Kind of fulfilling yourself and trying to fulfill yourself. I've been lucky. I've had the opportunity, and I've been able to do that. Close to your family. Well, when you run your own business, and my daughter spent years in hospital because of rheumatoid arthritis. Well, I worked from a hospital waiting room for years, so I'm lucky, because what I just heard makes an awful lot of sense. And I think back, I had the opportunity not to do and to fulfil myself. The one thing I really miss is my dad was a wonderful man and a wonderful pianist, a classical pianist. All I ever heard as a child was Rachmaninoff and Chopin and all that. But I never really knew him. I'm the youngest of four. And, I think he was, 43 when I was born. And, of course, by the time, I grew up and started to have a lot more time and all the rest of it, he was no longer with us. So that would probably be because there's so many things I would love to have asked him. He was really a very strong individual. He came from a very wealthy Tory family, and he was a socialist, broke away from the whole family, which meant he suffered financially because of his beliefs and convictions. So he was a man, that had very strong views and opinions and, backed his own judgment. But as a person, I never really knew him.
And how old were you when he died, Max?
He was 70. I would probably have been in my mid-20s or late-20s.
And you had an opportunity to know him, but you just...
Well, I didn't. I mean, to be fair, don't forget, it was the early days of my business, going all over the world with, the Beatles and the groups and, because in the 60s when I started out, it was all just opening up. So I was travelling an awful lot. And of course, then I started and had my own family and Louise came along. So, of course, I would see them, but I didn't have the quality time. I never had that kind of time or made that time where I would sit down quietly with him and talk about his feelings, philosophies, yeah, thoughts. Most of what I've learned about him came from my elder sister and elder brothers.
It's really interesting, actually, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of people identifying with what you're saying, that they just wish that, it doesn't even cost any money, does it, to sit down with your mum or your dad and just get to know them better, get to know more about their life.
I didn't think, he was early 70s when he died, and I suppose I never thought, I thought he'd be around until he was 80 or whatever or more. And, of course, it didn't work out like that. It was an opportunity, and it was the one thing when I think back, and, when your researcher phoned me yesterday, it made me think. And that would be something that, I got as close as I could from talking to my mum about him after he died, and talking to my older brothers and sister. But it's not the same, is it, as asking your own questions?
Yeah.
Because he was obviously a quite remarkable person, and someone that was, very, very strong values. And, you know, as I say, just to give you that background, he could have come and had a very wealthy, comfortable lifestyle, but he turned his back on it because of his political convictions. Well, that takes an awful lot of doing, because he struggled financially all his life because of that.
And presumably you wish your dad was still around to see how successful you are.
Oh, I'd love to have done that. I mean, to a slight degree with, you know, with my mum, you know, that when I had a beautiful Jaguar and, you know, I was starting to do things and go places, I would pick her up and take her to the Isabella Plantation in Richmond. You know, we lived in South Wimbledon, or Epsom Downs, which we loved. And I always remember that we would, on the way out, she would always say, oh, I'm just going to pop off to the ladies. And I knew what that meant. She always had, she was a big fat lady, my mum, ever so cuddly and ever so funny, and she used to giggle a lot. And when she giggled, she shook. So I was always trying to make her giggle. But, and she would come out of the ladies' room with a big handbag bulging. And I knew she used to pinch the toilet rolls. Because we never had toilet rolls.
No.
So, yeah, honestly. And I said, Mum, you don't need to do that. I'll buy you every toilet roll in the bloody world. You know, but, oh, no, it's such a waste, dear. So, you know, if ever you went to the Loo in our, where she lived in South Wimbledon, it would have Richmond upon Thames County Council or something on the toilet roll, or Epsom and Ewell County Council.
Is this after you were...
successful? Well, I mean...
A millionaire?
No, I wasn't. I was doing very well. I wasn't a millionaire then. And I'll give you another funny story about her. Every week I used to go and see her, and I'd take her in the best steak and the best this and flowers and whatever. And I used to give her £5 or £10 a week. And this is going back, I don't know, 30, 40 years or something like that. Anyway, when eventually my mum died, and she was in her mid-70s, she left a will written on a piece of paper, just one little piece of paper. And my sister by then, who'd been a diplomat and then was living in South Africa, had sugar plantations down there. And she sent over a pair of elephant ear boots for my dad. Boots made out of elephant ears. I mean, unbelievable, but they did. So she had these boots upstairs, and she said in her will, and Max is to have the elephant ear boots when she died. So I got these elephant ear boots, and it was stuffed full of all the money I'd given her for the previous few years. Isn't that funny? So, but...
Do you know, isn't it? I know we're going off on a tangent here, away from regrets, but isn't it interesting, you know, a tough character like you, and some people would perceive me to be tough, and I'm not, I'm a big wuss, but isn't it interesting that when we start talking about our parents... how many of us, Max, melt. I certainly do. Big smile comes on my face when I think of my mum and dad.
I mean, it's a real thing, isn't it? You know, you have to be what you have to be, and you know, and I'm working in a very fierce, competitive world, and I've done for a long, long time. You know, but when it comes to the real things and the real people, if you see what I mean, you know, then of course, yeah, then I think you probably get a little bit of a taste of probably the real person. But, I mean, you know, we...
So here you were, I'm just thinking that story you were telling me. So here you were giving your mum money, and what she was doing was she was going up and keeping it for you.
Yeah. I mean...
My mother, I call her Big Audrey, she does exactly the same. If my mum wants anything, I go and I get the cash and give it to her, and she drives me insane. It's actually been the source of lots of arguments between her and I. Because what does she do? I give her the money. I give her the cash. What does she do? I'll come in the next week and she'll say, I put that in the book for you. And I said, what? I've put that in the bank book for when I die. And I'm going, but I gave you the money.
Yeah.
You're giving me my money back. I don't want it back.
That's the whole thing, you see. In some ways, they're still taking care of you. They're looking after you. But, I mean, there's a million funny stories like that, you know, that I would tell you. I mean, one of the things was that, as I say, my mum used to giggle, and, you know, and the more she giggled, the more I liked it. So whenever I got the opportunity, particularly when there were people around, family or anybody, I would, you know, and I always seemed to have the ability to make her laugh and giggle. And unfortunately, when she giggled and shook, she also had, used to have slight wind problems. So that became a prime target for me. And of course, so suddenly there would be these noises And I used to say, "Mother, for goodness sake." And then everyone would turn and say, "Don't you dare blame your mother." And then as if she would, you know. And I, but she did. It was her. No, it was you. I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, she Lily the Pink, I used to call her, because, you know, when she used to get, she used to come to us every Sunday for dinner, and we had a big bath upstairs, but she didn't have a bathroom at home. And she'd go up there and have a great big soak, take her stays off and everything else. And she'd come back and she'd be totally pink all over and glowing.
So what's it like then, Max, when clearly, you know, you were very close to your mum? What's it like when you lose her? I haven't lost my mum.
Well, I haven't.
Oh, she's still alive.
She's still with me.
Oh, for goodness sake.
No. She passed on a long time ago, but she's still with me. I talked to her and many times. You know, it's the same with my dad. Many, many times when something funny happens, and there's not many days that something funny doesn't happen to me, you know, I can almost see her laughing and feel her laughing around me at what's gone on. And particularly some of the situations I get myself involved with and have been involved with. So she's still with me. She's still very, very close. As I say, I just wished I'd been closer to my dad, because it would have been easier for me to kind of, you know, keep that closeness with him. But because I didn't really know him anything like as well as I knew my mum.
So do you seriously think that, do you believe in an afterlife and all that?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I've had these discussions with all kinds of people, and it's a whole interesting. I just think that, you know, you're from them and you're part of them and they're with you. You know, whether there's something afterwards remains to be seen, you know, and we won't know that until the time comes. But, you know, I just think that when you're that close to people, and, you know, it's like Liz, my wife, died of cancer nearly 9 years ago now, but I still feel her presence, and, you know, and I'm still aware of her.
In what way do you feel her presence?
Just at times, you know, in situations and things that happen, and you just feel that presence somehow.
And what do you put that down to?
I've just put it down to love and being close, and, you know, and the kind of deep feelings that you have, and those deep feelings remain while the person isn't still with you.
The world of celebrity that you deal in, Max, must be incredibly superficial compared to what is really important to you, clearly, what we're hearing from now.
I mean, listen, I'm patron of children's hospices. I'm, you know, patron of about 12 different children's national charities now. Most weeks I'm up at one of the hospices with families that little ones are dying, or even, you know, just recently you're talking to them and the little one's lying there dead by the side of you. So that's real. And doing what you can to help these things, and I'm in a wonderful position I can. You know, I got Simon and Cal involved with the whole business of children's hospices, and he's been a huge supporter. And we're able to do a lot of things for the kids. We've got a party in just a couple of weeks for a load of children from children's hospices, which Simon and I are doing in town. You can do an awful lot in those situations. That's real. The rest of it, like relief, and you see it for what it is. You know, most stars I've worked with over the years, 40, 50 years now, there's only one person that matters. And that actually generally is quite empty and quite sad. And no matter how rich and famous they are, they're generally not very happy people. So you see it for what it is. And, you know, it's you do what you can. And, you know, I love what I do, whether it's, you know, the companies we look after or the stars we look after.
And you've got to be tough, and you've got to be a fighter to do what you do. And you've got to,
I think you have to stand up for yourself. But, you know, that's the way that most people are. I mean, we came from a relatively poor family. You know, there was no bathroom. There was an outside toilet. There was a tin bath outside. And my mum had to take in lodgers and things like that. Not that we were any worse off than any of our neighbours, because everybody was in the same boat. So, you know, you learn to stand up for yourself. And I think that where I've been very, very lucky, someone at their school at 15... one door opened and then another door opened. I joined EMI Records, having worked in the local papers as a journalist, having been sacked from my first job as a trainee salesman, was being rude to some of the customers that were snobs, and they signed the Beatles.
Do you know, Max?
I was 19.
Max, I hope I'm not being sycophantic saying this, but the more often I talk to you, genuinely, the more I admire you, because you just come across as a decent person. And thank you very much. We've got to go to the news now, but thank you so much for talking to me today.
Lovely to speak to you, Stephen.
Thank you, Max. Bye-bye.